Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Welcome to Freedom of Species, where the show that brings and advocacy airwaves of 3CR community radio. Before us, you heard Sally with Out of the Pan, which covered Rodney Croom from Just Equal and Let Us Give, talking about changes to blood and plasma donations that came into effect last Monday. And Sally finished off with a song, Devil Inside, from In Excess. And yeah, make sure if you missed that episode, check it out via the 3CR website or via the podcast apps. Definitely look up Out of the Pan and check it out, subscribe, and check out that show every Sunday, 12 till 1. On Freedom of Species today, we've got Sheena. Welcome to the show for the first time, Sheena. Nice to have you on.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And yeah, Sheena is an activist with the Plant-Based Treaty, which we're going to discuss in detail on the show today. I guess before we get into that, we often start off with a question for our guests, sort of their story towards thinking about animals. It can be like your vegan journey, but it can be back before that, or like even before, as I know, like myself, when I was a kid, I think I had very much pro-animal views long before I actually became vegan. So you can go back as far as you like, but how has your, I guess, thinking and actions towards animals evolved over the years?
Yeah, it actually started in around 2018 when I picked up a book from a secondhand bookstore called Diet for a Hot Planet by Anna LaPay. And after reading that book, it got me really interested in the effect of animal agriculture, particularly on climate and environment. Soon after that, I read the UNFAO's Livestock's Long Shadow and another report called Grazed and Confused. And I was really shocked by kind of what we're doing to our planet for primarily meat and dairy, but also all different types of animal products and aquaculture and fishing. So it was around 2019 when I was watching, I started learning about the environment after that. And it was in 2019 when I saw that activists had kind of closed down Flinders Street intersection and did a lock-in in a bunch of slaughterhouses around the country to raise awareness for the film called Dominion. And I thought, wow, if the activists, you know, are doing something like this, there must be something very wrong with the industry. So it kind of sparked my interest, and I watched Dominion after that, and I very quickly became, as well as an environmental vegan, an ethical vegan. So that was kind of how it all started. I started doing activism straight away. My son was very, very young at the time, and I thought, we need to do everything we can to make this planet a better future for our children. I started doing Anonymous for the Voiceless, doing different marches and protests, doing advocacy with We the Free. And then in 2022, I started volunteering with the Plant-Based Treaty while I was in Toronto in Canada for a short period after leaving Australia to go back to Canada for a few years where I'm from. I did a lot of volunteer work with them, and I thought this campaign is really important. Systemic change, institutionalized change was somewhere where I really wanted to invest my time. And yeah, so I've been a campaigner for them for the last just over a year here in Australia.
Great. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the Dominion rally, because I was following that at the time. And yeah, it did get a lot of criticism, but I do think it really was quite pivotal, actually raising veganism as a social justice issue, not just a dietary preference like gluten-free or something like that. So I do think it actually, yeah, again, it definitely did get a bunch of people offside, but I think it did have a overall positive effect on raising that social justice side of it.
Yeah, 100%. I think I mean, anyone just has to take one look at the film and, you know, we can no longer use the excuse that that's not done here in Australia. Mm. The film is made here in Australia, all with the high welfare, best of the best, and it's still pretty horrific. So I think it was great at getting that across, that it's just not, it's not a one-off farm or a one-off slaughterhouse that does it like this. It is across the board. Mm. And I think the film was great to get that across.
Absolutely, yeah. And I guess the second sort of introductory question I have, so a lot of my activism focus a lot around vegan, being vegan, but also encouraging others to be vegan. And I still think that is an important thing people to do. And my individual veganism is very important to me personally. But over the last few years, I guess both in an activist sense, but also some of my academic work has sort of started to look beyond individuals and thinking about, you know, policies and institutions and that structural change. So I was wondering your sort of evolving thinking around that issue as well, of thinking about, when you mention the Anonymous for the Voiceless and that kind of thing, I believe that's sort of that more individual outreach and sort of your thinking of going from, yeah, that focus on individual veganism to thinking sort of the broader of the sort of the societal shift to more of a plant-based food system.
Yeah, we kind of tend to think of them as separate. You know, we have people that we advocate for to change their individual actions, which through supply and demand will kind of change the system. But there's so much more to that. So much more of the system has to change to enable people to make better individual choices. So I think, like we'll talk about a little later when we talk about the campaign, you know, people want to make good decisions, but they're just not enabled to at every juncture when it comes to the cost of animal products versus plant-based products, when it comes to the labeling on foods. They are just kind of misguided. And most people want to make the right decisions, but they just can't, in terms of education, in terms of, you know, the awareness that city councils, that cities can do. So much needs to change. Subsidies, meat and methane taxes, things like that. Those are really the things that can bring about change at a larger scale. So it was once I started learning about that, I thought, well, you know, this is much more than just supply and demand, that we have to advocate for systemic change. And the best campaign that I thought was doing that was Plant-Based Treaty.
Yeah, that's right. I guess sort of changing the food system so plant-based foods are incentivized rather than leaving the incentives in terms of like subsidies and those kind of things towards animal agriculture and then encouraging individuals to choose plant-based foods within an animal-based, that an animal-based food kind of privileged food system of actually changing that. And that definitely, brings us towards the plant-based treaty. But do you want to talk a little bit more about what it's about?
Yeah, so basically the plant-based treaty is a campaign to put our food systems at the forefront of combating the climate and ecological crisis. The eventual goal of the plant-based treaty is to work as a companion to the UNFCCC's Paris Agreement. So that's United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, Paris Agreement. So the Paris Agreement is what I think over 190 countries have signed on to limit global warming to below 1.5 degrees. But the problem with the Paris Agreement is that it doesn't address a transition away from our biggest emitters. It doesn't even explicitly name the fossil fuel industry or the animal agricultural industry as major contributors. So the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty was created to address a transition away from fossil fuels into clean energy. And similarly, the plant-based treaty was created as a companion to the Paris Agreement to address a transition away from animal agriculture towards a plant-based agricultural system. So the plant-based treaty has three core demands, which are to redirect, to relinquish, and to restore. So that basically involves redirect, which is basically eliminating the driving forces behind the problem, promotion of plant-based foods, actively transitioning from animal foods towards a plant-based food system. So that can include many things, some of which I mentioned before, which are meat and methane taxes, carbon labeling, transitioning subsidies, and some of this is already being done. So for instance, in Denmark, they have introduced the world's first fixed carbon tax on animal agriculture by 2030. For carbon labeling, Edinburgh's City Council, Edinburgh has endorsed the plant-based treaty, and part of their action plan includes carbon labeling at universities and schools. Some of your listeners may have already heard that in Switzerland, starting on June 1st, they've began implementing mandatory labeling declaring animal suffering on products. Mm-hmm. So these are the kind of things that we're looking at, which will, again, redirect a transition away from animal agriculture towards plant-based agricultural system. Some of the other things in the redirect demand is countries first off declaring a climate emergency, also prioritizing food security, shifting away from monoculture-based arable farming. Again, most monocultures are fed to livestock. We need to decrease the amount of monocultures that we have and transition those to plant-based food systems. Transitioning to plant-based meals in public institutions such as schools and hospitals, and providing financial support for farmers that want to transition. And I think there's a city in three Dutch cities, Utrecht, Bloemendaal, and Haarlem, that are implementing bans on advertising for meat and dairy products in public spaces. Yeah. So we're already seeing a lot of this happening. The second demand that we have is to relinquish. So we need to stop the problem from increasing. That is asking for no land use change, including deforestation for animal agriculture. So we want no conversion of land, the banning of live exports, no new farms and slaughterhouses, protection of indigenous people and their land, no expansion or intensification of existing farms. Again, Holland in 2021 unveiled a $25 billion plan to halt and reverse expansion of animal agriculture. So that's a great example of how this is already working. We want no building of new animal farms. In 2024, Berkeley in California in the U.S. passed an ordinance to ban new factory farms within the city via a measure called Measure DD. We want no expansion or intensification of existing farms. So in 2021, another example of that is U.S. Senator Cory Booker reintroduced legislation known as the Farm System Reform Act, which would place a moratorium on new and existing expanding animal feeding operations, as well as the phase out of the largest ones by 2040. So that's the second demand. The third demand that we have is restore. So this is about actively healing the problem while building resilience and mitigating climate change. So, you know, I think it was an article in Science that came out, a study that said, even if we were to stop fossil fuels today, we still can't stay below 1.5 degrees unless we transition our food system to a plant-based food system. But a huge part of that is an active restoration of the land. So that means reforestation and restoration of the ocean, of our land, replanting critical carbon absorbers on the current land that we're using for animal agriculture, subsidizing farmers who practice good land stewardships, protecting of marine protected areas and increasing it from marine protective areas to something called highly marine protected areas, which would have much more stricter regulations because the regulations right now aren't great at protecting the ocean protected areas. So there are some countries, I think Scotland has already initiated some areas to be going from marine protected areas to highly marine protected areas. So yeah, those are the three kind of core principles that we have. And on our website, we have 40 kind of detailed proposals that cities and national governments can take to transition our food system.
Yeah, that's great to hear that, like, these are not just ideas, but there's already things happening all around the world that are actually moving in that direction. Yeah, I've got a bunch of points kind of flowing on from that, but I think maybe now might be a good time to take our first song. And Sheena sent me a bunch of music and I've picked three of those songs. So the first one I picked from Sheena's picks was Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder. I didn't realize Stevie Wonder was vegan. That was kind of cool to find out. Anything you want to say about the song?
Oh, it's just Stevie Wonder has always been one of my favorites and one of my dad's favorites, one of my mom's favorites. And yeah, I found out very recently that I think he was a vegetarian for a while. Mm-hmm. And now he's a vegan. So I thought a great song to play on the radio.
Yeah, and I was looking up, I believe this song is about his daughter as well. But yeah, enjoy. This is Stevie Wonder. Isn't she lovely?
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science. And scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. We've got Sheena from the Plant-Based Treaty. And yeah, just before we heard the song Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder, we were discussing, or Sheena was discussing some of the, I guess, the principles of the Plant-Based Treaty, but also some of the ways in which they're already being implemented all around the world in different ways. And yeah, I was interested in the, yeah, you, at the start you mentioned that supply and demand sort of model that we have the animal movement. And I think there is, you know, there is, it's not totally without merit in that, like, I think if you don't want animal products to exist, not buying them is a good thing to do. But it's maybe not that simple because also, I guess, companies create the demand as well through things like advertising. So having those sort of regulations around advertising, as was that Harlem was doing that? Was it Harlem, the band? Yeah, like actually, that sort of actually changes that demand through that sort of structural intervention. I was also thinking, I really like the messaging in the Plant-Based Treaty because, yeah, I've had a lot of conversations and heard a lot of conversations with environmental activists about why there is no mention of animal agriculture in environmental movements, or not enough, not many anyway. And the argument is often, well, we can't have everyone go vegan, so therefore we won't touch animal agriculture, which is kind of a strange thing, because like as Plant-Based Treaty shows, we can actually challenge animal agriculture on a structural level, but also we can address fossil fuels on the individual level too, right? Like riding a bike rather than driving a car, etc. So it's kind of it kind of doesn't really make sense. But also because, like, I imagine the Plant-Based Treaty, there's already this structural messaging around fossil fuels of, like, no new fossil fuels, etc. So I feel like Plant-Based Treaty has, like, a big head start through drawing on that environmental messaging around fossil fuels and just transferring it to animal agriculture. Is that the case, that they've kind of been inspired by sort of those structural messaging of environmental movements?
Well, 100%. The Plant-Based Treaty is largely based on the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Anita Kreins, who's the global campaign coordinator for Plant-Based Treaty, was a long-time environmentalist, and when she was protesting the destruction of old growth forests in Western Canada, in the 80s, there she met Sipora Berman, who went on to chair the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty, and Anita and some other people from Plant-Based Treaty sat down with Sipora Berman and said, how can we put animal agriculture on the climate agenda? And what Sipora Berman said is that traditionally animal rights activists, we're talking about go vegan, but we really need to talk to governments and change policy if we're going to make any kind of real change. Mm. So the Plant-Based Treaty is largely based on the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty to try and change the systems that enable people to make better decisions.
And as you said earlier as well, it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, just because you're protesting Adani coal mine doesn't make it irrelevant how you get around in terms of your transport as well. Like, you can ride a bike and protest a coal mine, and just as you can be vegan and also have this institutional focus as well. I know you want to also talk a bit about why the Plant-Based Treaty is needed. I know you touched on that a bit already in terms of there's similar things around fossil fuels, but
I think, you know, when we think of global greenhouse gas emissions, most people will go straight to fossil fuels. And of course, you know, I think 2/3 of all global greenhouse gas emissions do come from the fossil fuel industry, but 1/3 of global greenhouse gas emissions are solely attributable to our food system. And that's predominantly our animal agriculture-based food system. And that's mostly because of the impact of methane, which is a much more potent greenhouse gas in its global warming potential than CO2 is. Also, nitrous oxide, of which most comes from animal agriculture as well, is about, I think, 300 times more potent in its greenhouse gas warming capability than CO2 is. So, yep, 1/3 of all greenhouse gas emissions come from our food system. Specifically here in Australia, 57% of Australia's emissions come from the animal agricultural industry. It also has the highest per capita greenhouse gas emissions of Australia does of all the G20 countries. And there was a study that said if people adopted the Australian diet globally by 2050, we would need 6.5 Earths just to support food production. Our diet here in Australia is one of the highest for nitrogen consumption. I think it's 69% of our nitrogen emissions come from our food system. In terms of land use, I think a lot. Well, there was an amazing study done a few years ago by Poor and Nemechek from Oxford University, and they said that 83% of global agricultural land is used for animal agriculture, yet it only provides us with 37% of protein and 18% of global calories. So it's a very bad use of our land, a very bad use of our water. Specifically here in Australia, 50% of our forests and bushlands have been cleared or degraded for animal agriculture. In terms of water use, it's also the biggest, you know, animal agriculture requires so much more water than plant foods do. I think Australia is in the top three countries with the most potential to reduce our per capita water footprint through plant-based dietary shifts. So there's a huge opportunity here when Australia is already drought-stricken. We have reduced rainfall and, you know, many countries reach their ground zero with water. I'm sorry, many cities reduce their get to their ground zero with water. So it's water is very crucial here in Australia. In terms of biodiversity, Australia has one of the highest rates of extinction in the world. I think it's in Queensland and New South Wales alone. About 50 million mammals, birds, and reptiles are killed as a result of deforestation and land clearing. And that's primarily due to cattle grazing. So kind of beyond the environmental effect of animal agriculture and the climate effect of animal agriculture, our food system puts a huge strain on food security. Australia, so if we think about Australia's land, you know, one of the arguments here is that we don't have enough arable land, that we have to graze cattle on our land or graze livestock on our land. And although that is true for some parts of the land, we currently do use 60% of Australia's arable land to grow cereals that are fed to livestock. And if we can grow cereals, we can grow food for direct human consumption. So it is huge for, again, land use, but also huge for food security here in Australia. The other major, I guess, issues that our food system affects beyond climate and environment are antibiotic resistance. I think it's predicted that 40 million people will die per year through antibiotic resistance by 2050. And again, most antibiotics are fed to farmed animals, which creates antibiotic resistant strains of bacteria in humans that antibiotics fail to help. So it's a huge health risk. The other one is the zoonotic diseases. So those are diseases passed from animals to humans. H1N1. We have bird flu, swine flu, COVID-19. All of these are zoonotic diseases, and again, all of them come from animals. Primarily, they come from us going into areas that were previously untouched areas, and that's where the kind of the spillover happens, but they can also breed in our intensive feeding operations, again, for livestock. The other health issues that our food system affects is the rates of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and various forms of cancer. So those are kind of the interconnected impacts of our food system, which we address in our report that we published at COP 20, which is our Safe and Just report, which people can find on our website. And that talks about all of the many interconnected impacts of our food system and why it's crucial to transition to a plant-based food system.
Yeah, and when you were talking about this earlier on about the different different demands like restore and rewilding and that kind of thing, it's obviously so tied up with transitioning away from animal-based agriculture because you need that transition away to free up the land to then rewild it as well. CO2 versus methane. I'm in the social scientist. I'm definitely not an expert on this stuff, but I have heard, as well as being a more potent greenhouse gas, methane, that if we stop using CO2 now, which we absolutely need to do, or we stopped emitting it, it was going to take like maybe hundreds of years, many, many decades. Whereas if we stopped methane, we're going to have the benefits much in many few decades, which we need. Is that something you're happy to speak on? I'm definitely not an expert on that. But
That's 100% right. I've heard many people say the same thing, that reducing methane in the short term buys us time for longer living gases such as CO2 to reduce. And that's why we are in a methane emergency. So one of the things we do ask is, as well as cities declaring a climate emergency, we also need to declare a methane emergency. Countries like Australia and many other countries have signed the Global Methane Pledge, but most countries are not on track to meeting their targets because they are not addressing animal agriculture adequately.
Yeah, absolutely. And even when we had the carbon tax many years ago, I believe, like, animal agriculture was exempt from that as well. So there's something that, a lot of governments don't want to touch. But again, it's good to see that is changing. And I guess on those lines, I was browsing the plant-based treaty website. We'll give a plug for that at the end, but it's plantbasedtreaty.org, just in case anyone wants to have a look as we're discussing this. But yeah, really, really nice website, I did want to say as well. But it was interesting. You know, I was seeing lots of animal advocacy organizations support it, which is unsurprising. But there was also the media coverage tab as well, which had pretty regular coverage in some pretty big publications too. So it's obviously getting out beyond. I was wondering, in your experiences or in Australia, in Melbourne, etc., how do you feel this campaign is going in terms of getting out beyond just, okay, where animal advocates were already agree with that stuff and we're kind of going to sign it, compared to actually having that discussion in society more broadly? Like, how do you go about that and how effective do you think that's been so far?
As is common in the kind of vegan world, everyone is very supportive, and we've had some amazing organizations endorse right from the beginning. I think one of our first political endorsers was the Animal Justice Party. Georgie Purcell, Member of Parliament Georgie Purcell and Emma Hurst were very early endorsers. They also spoke about the plant-based treaty in Parliament twice last year. Animals Australia were a very early endorser. Animal Liberation Victoria, Vegan Easy, we've done some great collaborations with them, and they've been, so supportive of the campaign and including information about plant-based treaty on their website and in their materials and in their social media posts. Beyond, I guess, kind of the within the vegan movement, it is a little bit tricky because the narrative tends to go towards, regenerative agriculture and the pushing of the ideas that we need to move towards regenerative agriculture, or that Australia is already far beyond what other countries are doing in terms of feed supplements for livestock and things like that. So it's been a little bit harder to get the message across in non-vegan circles. I will mention there are a few problems with that narrative that we have in Australia, that we cannot feed Australia's current demand for animal products on a regenerative agriculture based system. I think we would need 3 Earths just to do that. Feed supplements are not very practical here in Australia, where most of our animals are raised on pasture. It makes it very hard to administer feed supplements. It's been a little bit tricky getting the message across. But we've also had a lot of support from a lot of different organizations.
Great. I think that's a good time to go to our next song. So we had a second song, chosen by Sheena again, but this one is Creep by Radiohead. And the reason I picked this one in particular, or again, picked it from Sheena's picks, was It was discussed in the movie, horror thriller movie, Heretic. I don't know if you saw that at all, yeah. but it was kind of mentioned in that song. It was quite interesting, and it was like a metaphor for religion and stuff like that. It was quite an interesting point, but is there anything you'd like to say about this song, Creep by Radiohead, before we play it?
Well, I think the lead singer of Radiohead is also a vegan, and I remember at the time of the millennium in 2000, I think it was rated the best song of the century.
Wow.
And it's always been one of my favourites.
Wow, there you go. Okay, Creep by Radiohead. And you are on Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. We've got Sheena discussing the plant-based treaty, and we just heard Creep by Radiohead. We are coming towards the end of the show, so I just wanted to hand it over to Sheena to talk about some of the different, sub-campaigns of the plant-based treaty, but also how people can, sign the pledge and get involved, etc.
Yeah, so you can go onto plantbasedtreaty.org and endorse as an individual. I think over 250,000 individuals have endorsed the treaty. So that's a great first step people can take. So in the plant-based treaty, we have kind of five main programs. The first one is collecting endorsements, again, asking for individuals, businesses, organizations, politicians, celebrities, scientists to endorse the treaty. Again, this is largely symbolic, but it does show that there is a support for a transition to a plant-based food system.
And so I imagine when you're approaching businesses or governments and those kind of things, you can say, we've got all those people behind it. Is that sort of the reason behind it? Yeah,
exactly right. And even when we're approaching cities, you know, we can say that this many people have endorsed the treaty, this many businesses within the council have endorsed the treaty. Mm-hmm. Scientists, is, of course, a huge one. We've had many Nobel laureates and IPCC scientists endorse the plant-based treaty, which is great to show the government that there is and scientific support for it as well. Mm. The second program we have is our Menu Change, Not Climate Change program. So we have kind of our plant-based treaty playbooks on our websites and we work with institutions like universities, senior homes, sports teams. The primary objective of it is to increase plant-based options and also increase education around plant-based foods. We also promote initiatives like carbon labeling and plant-based trials timed with kind of key events like Earth Month and Veganuary. That Menu Change, Not Climate Change, we also have our 100 Cafes campaign, which anyone can get involved in. That involves going around to your local businesses, asking them to endorse the treaty, or put up a plant-based treaty sticker that says simply we serve plant-based milks or we serve plant-based foods. And that has kind of two objectives. It kind of starts to normalize and showcase that a business is being more proactive with their menu offering for the environment, but it also can put pressure on city councils as well to show them that there is this support in the local council for a transition to a plant-based food system. The third program we have is our city program. This is very important because, again, we're trying to create bottom-up pressure on national governments to negotiate a global plant-based treaty. So far, 43 cities around the world have endorsed.
Wow.
Including, I think, 16 cities in India, maybe three in the USA, including Los Angeles and West Hollywood, in Europe, Amsterdam, Edinburgh, Belfast. And last year here in Australia, Darebin became the first city to endorse the treaty. And what that means is that they have to incorporate food-based strategies within their climate action plans, not just climate action plans, but also biodiversity or even food security action plans, because the food system, you know, affects all of those things. So our city programs is another way people can get involved. On our website, if anyone would like to email their city councillors, you can go into the Act Now tab. And when you put in your name and address and council, a pre-written letter will automatically come up with all your councillors' names ticked, and you can send that off to your city council. So as well as endorsing, that's probably the other very simple action that people can take if they would like to see their city endorse the plant-based treaty. The fourth program we have is our advocacy at Global Climate Talks. So again, like I said, we would like the objective is for the plant-based treaty to work as a companion to the UNFCCC's Paris Agreement. So we do attend all the global climate talks, such as the COP, so the Conference of Parties. And there is a chance of Australia has a bid to host the next COP, COP31, in 2026. So it's a great time for people to get involved, especially if they want to help build momentum, raise awareness, and make sure that food systems are firmly on the climate agenda at the next Conference of Parties. The other program we have is our training and capacity building. So like I said, so this is a grassroots campaign, primarily led by activists and people just volunteering their time to advocate for these changes. So to help regular people just advocate for the plant-based treaty, we have lots of playbooks and trainings and webinars. I think you mentioned before on our website, there's a lot of amazing resources for people to look at via our website. We also have launched plant-based treaty at Monash University and at University of Melbourne. So that involves, I think, trying to increase plant-based options on campus with the goal of hopefully getting the universities to endorse the plant-based treaty. So people can find out more about our university campaigns through for University of Melbourne. It's the UMSU Enviro on Instagram. And again, for the Monash Society, Vegan Society for Monash University. Otherwise, people can find us on kind of Instagram or on Facebook at Plant-Based Treaty Australia, New Zealand. Or they can reach out to me directly if they would like to start a city campaign. And I'm at Sheena@plantbasedtreaty.org.
Great. Yes. And so if people are keen to get more involved than like just signing, just like endorsing it, like wanting to do more, they can, I guess, either click on the Act Now button or contact you to get involved locally. Yeah. Great. I was also interested, something I was kind of interested to address as well is that I know there's a lot of people who have kind of come to a similar conclusion to what you and I have come to around the importance of structural change and sort of reframing our messaging and those kind of things, but have maybe gone a long way in the other direction of like, it's all about systems and it's all about, the systems, and it's about institutions, and actually what individuals do is quite irrelevant. And I've recently published a book chapter sort of, I guess, talking philosophically about a lot of the kind of stuff you're doing practically. But in that chapter, I was always kind of stressing, I'm not rejecting individual vegan. I do think that can play a part. But again, sometimes these messages are kind of used in a way to sort of be anti-vegan in a way. And it doesn't matter if you're vegan, that's totally irrelevant. It's all about the system. And I was kind of thinking like, yes, not everyone can be vegan. Like, even if we think, like, even if we don't think global, let's just think Melbourne, for example, you're a homeless person and you're relying on food from like charity providers. Well, of course, you can only eat like what you're provided. Like, so even if we don't go global, even local, like, yes, we need to kind of change those systems. But I also, therefore it's elitist, promote veganism, those kind of things. But I also kind of feel like giving up on individuals becoming vegan can be a little bit elitist too, because it's kind of like, we're these special few people, these 1 or 2% who are vegan, but the rest of the 98%, like, no, they'll never do it. It was just us sort of special few. And I think, no, like, I'm not that special. I think there's plenty of other people around me who could also do this. But yeah, how do you feel? Like, you've touched on this a bit already, but how do you feel about the place of individual veganism in the movement, whether that's activists themselves living vegan or even promoting vegan outreach, etc.?
Look, I think one of my most favorite things to do is to do animal rights outreach and to do vegan outreach. I think it's hugely satisfying, hugely rewarding to see people change right in front of you. And I definitely think there's a place for both. I think those of us that enjoy advocating for individual change should be doing it. Those of us that enjoy and have the ability and capacity to advocate for systemic change should be doing it. My hope is that most people kind of will do both. I do think both are very, very important. But it's, again, whatever people have time and capacity for. Now I spend most of my time doing this, but for instance, today after this, I'm going to be doing outreach with Farm Transparency Project. So it's, you know, it's a great way. It can be kind of isolating when we sit at home and we're trying to advocate for systemic change. Again, most of that is done, you know, at home on your computer. But it's, I think it's a great balance to advocate for individual change as well.
Yeah. And I think we need to see that, like, the connections between, like, it's one individual making a change isn't necessarily change in the system, but also, like, systems are made up of individuals. And if we have that sort of individual change, like individual changing behavior, changing attitude, changing mindset, then that structural change becomes more likely as well. So, yeah, as you said, it's not either or. And, yeah, we can absolutely be doing both as individuals and both as a movement as well. Again, so even if individuals are just promoting individual change or individuals just promoting structural change as a movement, we're doing both. But again, I think the plant-based treaty is really important. I think as a movement, we have been perhaps like overly focused on that individual change as well. And I guess I was also thinking about that individual structural. I also think, the chapter I mentioned before, another thing I wrote about is when we are promoting individual veganism, which I think there is absolutely a place for in the movement, we can also reframe our messaging. So we're sort of acknowledging it. Acknowledging it more, like, rather than saying, like, you're doing a bad thing, you're causing this, of like, no, the industry is doing these bad things and you can make the individual change. I was wondering if that is anything, like, is that discussion going on within movements? Because I've definitely seen a lot more in climate movements of talking about plant-based food system and those kind of things. But yeah, the sort of the vegan advocacy space is something I've less involved in than I once was. Are those discussions going on about messaging in your experience?
I guess it depends who you're talking to. I know a lot of people are very aware of the role that corporations and governments have to play in our food system. A lot of people don't. A lot of people just want to say, well, we should be focusing on individual change and not kind of institutionalized or systemic change. But I think it's becoming more and more clear, like it is with, like you said in your wonderful chapter, how clear it is that when we talk about fossil fuels, that we do put the blame on the fossil fuel corporations and the role that they have to play in what people decide to choose. But with animal agriculture, it's not as well known. You know, we rarely blame the big animal agriculture businesses. It's all about personal change. But I think, I think it depends who you're talking to. Like we talked about with our three demands, corporations and governments have such a big responsibility, and there's so much more that they can do to enable individuals to make better choices.
And I think there is that idea out there, like promoting veganism is very off-putting or it gets people offside. But again, I think that is maybe not inherent to veganism, but again, the way that it's like, as you were saying and as I was saying in that chapter of, it's like, you are not the problem, like you can be the solution. I feel like that framing is probably less likely to get people offside than, like, I think the message I was talking about in the chapter was like, he died for your yogurt or those kind of things. So it's like, this happened because of you rather than this company is doing this bad thing. How about like boycotting those companies and not supporting those practices?
Yeah, exactly. It's also, you know, about exposing what the corporations and what the governments have been doing to kind of muddy the waters in this area. So we try and do that a lot too with, you know, all the science behind the science backing behind the campaign. Like I said, here in Australia, they try and muddy the waters with different research around regenerative agriculture or feed supplements. So it's about, you know, holding the government and the corporations accountable for really muddying the waters and not enabling people to make better decisions.
Great. We are very quickly running out of time. Any final thoughts you want to give? Again, plantbasedtreaty.org is the website. We'll put a link up to that and you can read more and endorse the treaty, and also go to ACT Now if you want to do even more. Any final thoughts, plugs, anything you want to say before we take off?
No, just thank you so much for having me. And like I said, we also have our sister organization, the Animal Save Movement, which encourages people to bear witness to the suffering of animals before they go into slaughter. And that's quite active here in Melbourne and also in different parts of the world. So that's another way people can kind of, if they are ethical vegans, get involved in the vegan movement. And if they're interested in the systemic side of things and the plant-based treaty, getting involved with that right now here in Australia would be great.
Great. Thanks so much. Stay tuned for rotations and you'll hear some music. That's from rotating different 3CR presenters playing a wide range of music. So stay tuned for that. And speaking of music, we're going to finish up with the song You Got Me. Is it Erykah Badu and Roots?
Yes.
Yeah. Anything you want to say about this song?
No, just that Erykah Badu is another, I think, quite a long time vegan. And it's just been one of my favorite songs for a very long time.
Great. Thanks so much. Stay tuned for rotations and make sure you check out Plant-Based Treaty.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.